No, 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 no! Let's try something else. Hit it, Joe.
Three idiots sharing memories with fans who watched the show. It's the best of both worlds.
Welcome, everyone, once again to another episode of Best of Both Our Worlds, the official, unofficial Hannah Montana podcast, the show where three idiots share our memories of Hannah Montana with the fans so they get a chance to see the other side of the best damn Disney show ever. I'm one of your hosts, Jason Earls. I play Jackson Rod Stewart on the show. Shannon.
Thank you, Jason. And I'm Shannon Flynn. I was a director on Hannah Montana and the acting coach.
Oh, wow. We're doing that. Okay. I am Douglas Danger Liebline. I was one of the writers and co-executive producers of Hannah Montana.
You were so worried about having low energy today. I shot out of a cannon.
Where'd that go?
I love it.
You know what? Before we jump into today's little babow sweet niblet, we want to thank everyone so much for your support. Truly. Thank your likes, your comments, your questions. They mean everything to us. And so we would like to start today with a little Fana Montana spotlight.
I love that name.
Share one of our favorite comments.
Yeah, this is a big one. I like this one a lot, actually. It's from Maddie Fickert. I think that's the way to say it. We'll put it up on the screen so you'll see. They left a comment on Instagram, and they write, "First of all, I'd really like to thank you for giving us the chance to watch such an amazing show. And now I have a question mainly for Steve, but honestly for all of you. When you were creating Hannah Montana, did you ever imagine it would become such a huge success and have such a strong impact on people's lives?" And we will get to the answer to that in the course of this episode, but we're going to jump ahead to the rest of the comment. They also say, "Personally, I watched Hannah Montana when I was 10 years old, then again at 17, and once more at 25. Mm-hmm. Every time I watched it, I saw the show from a completely different perspective and noticed new things. But I have to say that now at 25, I appreciate it so much more than I did as a kid. The show gave me a lot of positive messages, and even today there are things that it still helps me with in everyday life. I'm truly grateful to all of you for that, and I'm sending greetings from the Czech Republic."
Yes.
Yeah. I love these ones because it shows, I mean, you know, you had the Hannah toothbrushes in Target. You had the bedspreads. You had the concerts. But like seeing how globally the show was loved, I always love these comments especially.
Yeah. If you're thinking you'd like to be a part of our Fana Montana spotlight, leave a comment or review on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Morse code, ringy dingy to Jackson's personal phone number.
Right.
And you'll be in the running. And finally, please make sure to check out our brand fresh new website, bestofbotharworlds.com, for videos, behind the scenes photos, giveaways, and guys, merch.
All
about that merch. Yeah. My sweet little niblet for this episode is just that we're going to jump right into it because it's a very special episode. We have one of my all-time favorite people on the show. Doug, please give a fancy schmancy introduction for one of my all-time favorite people.
I can't wait for this one. Today's guest is a three-time Emmy Award-winning writer. Nine-time loser, but a three-time Emmy Award-winning writer who began his career as an actor, where he made millions of people laugh on shows like Happy Days, Benson, The Love Boat, Square Pegs, and a whole slew of other shows that our audience has never seen before. After meeting his longtime writing partner, Gary Donzig, and taking his talents to the other side of the camera, our guest spent the next few decades crafting the kind of stories that turn must-see TV into can't-stop rewatching classics. His resume reads like a best-of list for sitcom fans. This is true, though. He's best known for his work as an executive producer, writer, showrunner on the most iconic comedies in TV history, such as Murphy Brown, Suddenly Susan, and, of course, Hannah Montana. Please welcome my friend, Steve Peterman.
Yeah.
Stevie Peterman.
Wow. Yes.
I know you didn't write that.
Oh, I 100% wrote that.
Wow.
I'm giddier here for many reasons, but one of which is I'm not the oldest guy in the room now.
Oh, hey. No, you're not. Not by a long shot. And that is some of the sweetest things you have ever said. And I will tell people that one of the things Doug used to love to do was find old clips of my performances on YouTube or something, and he would send them to my son. Who at the time still had some affection and respect for me. And he, I remember my son watching a clip of me on Benson, where I was in a Zorro outfit for reasons I don't need to explain.
You were El Gato, environmental terrorist.
We have a lot to get through today. We won't tell everything. But my son watched this clip and turned to me with a look on his face somewhere between disgust and utter dumbfoundedness, and said, "Someone paid you to do this?" And that was, and now, yes. Doug, age has mellowed you.
Yes, yes. I've come to appreciate you. The ribbing back then was all out of love.
Yeah,
I know.
I'm super excited about this episode because not only do we have all our questions, but we have a bunch of fan questions that were sent in as well. And sometimes they matched up, so we might lump a few of them together.
That's great. Yeah,
and I get asked a lot of these questions as an actor from the show, but I've always been curious from your side how you see some of the things that I've been answering for years. So this is going to be super exciting.
And so let's just jump in.
Let's do it.
Our first question is,
by the way, it's about time that you had me on the show.
Wow. Emmy award-winning writer.
Nine-time loser.
Genius is knowing who to steal from.
By the way, we do now have 7 Emmys at the table.
Wow.
I'm saying Shannon has more than
between
Shannon.
Between two of us. High
five. Boom. Our first question is sort of a combo, half me, half our audience. We Cosplayer on Instagram, and I really hope We Cosplayer is 6'9" and huge. But We Cosplayer on Instagram asks, what made you want to work on a show like Hannah Montana? And I will follow that up by saying, I know when you and Gary were brought on the project, you had never done kids television before, right?
No, had actually our very first job was a kids show.
Oh, really?
Yes,
oh.
It was on Turner Broadcasting. It was one of the first, Ted Turner brought it, and it was one of the first shows for kids. After school, it was a 3:34 in the afternoon show. Nobody watched it.
Oh, great.
It was a perfect place to learn how to write. It was where our first transition from acting into writing came.
Oh.
And we worked for a guy named Arthur Anacarico at what became Zoetrope, Hollywood Center.
Okay.
And we put out a show called Rocky Road, which was one of the first mom and dad or dad let's do a sitcom shows.
Love that.
It was about a girl who's in college. Her parents, before the pilot, have died in an auto accident, and she has to leave college, come back home, and run the family ice cream parlor on a boardwalk that was like New Jersey. And,
Rocky Road. That makes sense.
Yeah. And we did a ridiculous schedule that was so fast and so cheap, but we had to learn. It was like summer stock for writers. You had to learn how to get it out fast and cheap.
So you did this at the beginning. And then you went on to this incredible career in primetime.
Right.
Right, Murphy Brown, Suddenly Susan, all this stuff. What was it about Hannah that, or this idea that brought you back to Kids TV?
Right. Two things.
Yeah.
The first, desperation.
Oh, excellent.
It's a great motivator.
We had a remarkable career. We had gone from that show to the very first season of Full House, which was a nightmare we don't have to talk about. And then we went on to Different World.
I love Different World.
Different World was a great experience for us. Then we get on Murphy Brown. Mm-hmm. Murphy Brown takes off. We're there for 6 years. We move from the baby writers to executive producing the show after Diane English, the wonderful creator of the show, leaves. Then we do Suddenly Susan. And then suddenly we're like, oh, we know what they can do. Oh, they've been around for 10 years. Who's the new kids on the block? Mm-hmm. Who's the 24-year-old genius? And we were like, oh, my God, am I done? And my kid was just starting, I don't know, he was in elementary school. And I thought, he's not even going to remember me when I was working. He's just going to remember me as the old guy on the couch in his robe yelling, "I can write funnier than that."
And basically, what I am now. Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, it was Doug, version one, and our agents said Disney is looking to upgrade. They know what their reputation is for writers, and they want to see if they can get some better quality writers. And Adam Bennett, who's one of the big creative guys over there, is a big fan of yours, not only from Murphy Brown, but it turned out he had a poster of Brooke Shields in his bedroom.
Oh my! Yes, as a kid. I remember that picture.
Yes.
He has a picture. You've seen the picture of him, right? With the baseball gloves.
Yes.
And the, yes, I remember that picture.
So anyway, they wanted to meet us.
Yeah.
And Gary, my wonderful writing partner, who I had my son in elementary school, Gary had no kids. Gary had no interest in having kids. He was a wonderful uncle, but that was as far as it went. Gary said to me, "Has it come to this? Has it come to this? We are going, they want us to go to Disney?" And I said, "Yes, it's come to this." And my kid, baby, needs a new pair of shoes. And he's going to need a lot of shoes because he's growing. And so we went and we met with Disney. And Adam was very, "Oh, my God, I love you guys," and blah, 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 and all that. And he showed us the pilot of Raven. Mm-hmm. They had just shot the pilot, and they were very excited about it. And, you know, there's nothing better than sitting in a room watching a pilot with the people who made it, and they're watching you.
And
it's like, it's Raven, it's okay, but... And she was... Anyway. And they gave us three scripts of different properties that they were thinking about. And said, "Take them home, read them, see what you think." That was on a Friday. So I read the three scripts. And I called Gary on Sunday night, and I said, "What do you think?" And he said, "If I had to work on one of these, I would kill myself."
Oh my God.
I couldn't finish them. They're abysmal. And I said, "I think this one has something." Mm. And that was Hannah.
And you were right.
And I was right. And I will tell you what it had that...
What did it have? That was my follow-up question. What was the thing in Hannah that you read? Because we've all read those early incarnations of the scripts, and they're nothing like what you and Gary rewrote.
Right, 100%.
But what was that sort of diamond in the rough? What was the thing?
Here's the thing that got to me first. My kids at that age, this is around the time of Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie and The Simple Life.
Yeah.
And suddenly people are getting on TV and becoming famous for being on TV. They have no particular talent, but they've gotten on TV, right?
Yeah.
And suddenly they're like, it's the first influencers. It's like whatever. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, oh, my God, I want to be like that. I want to be like that. Mm-hmm. And my kid's watching this stuff and is like, I want to be on TV. I love you, my son. You have no particular talent. I mean, you're for 9 years old, you're a very good baseball player.
And Will turned out to be one of the best background actors we ever had.
Will turned out to be an amazing writer and is doing fine in this industry right now himself. But at 9 years old, I wouldn't have watched him. And I love him. So I loved the fact that this was a girl who had become famous, but not only had talent, but the fame did not solve her problems and make her life wonderful.
Right.
The fame complicated her life, made her life more difficult. I also love the fact the relationship between father and daughter, at that time it's mother and daughter, we'll talk about that. I loved the best friend. I loved that when it came down to it, she still wanted to. She didn't want to disappoint her parents. She wanted to be a good friend. She wanted people to like her for herself.
Right.
I love that message. Also, as somebody may have pointed, somebody found out, I did have a band in high school.
Yes, I was going to ask that later. You do. We'll jump to it now.
You were
a musician, right?
I play a modicum of guitar. I was the lead singer and tambourine player. and I used to have the bruises on my leg at the end of
the day.
You
wonder why I make fun of this.
I was a profoundly energetic tambourine player. And I loved music then. Mm-hmm. I love music now. Mm-hmm. And the thought of doing a show... in which music, I think music is, is such a healing thing. I think music is such an emotionally, profoundly important gift that the universe has given to human beings. And I love that idea. So that's what intrigued me about the show. And I really did love this thing about fame isn't the magic.
Yeah. Right.
You know, isn't the magic beans.
Right.
That's what I saw in it.
Well, that's awesome.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so Gary and I had our first big fight, and he said, I don't see it, and I don't want to do it. And I said, Gary, my kid, I need to work. Mm-hmm. And so I went into Disney by myself. First time I'd ever, in our years of partnership. And Gary was not happy about it. But I went into Disney and I talked about the things that I would change, and we'll talk about what those were.
Yeah.
Disney said, okay, we like this, but we don't know you as a solo writer. We only know you as part of a team. We don't know who does what. If you can get Gary to come on board, we'd love you guys to rewrite this. And I talked to Gary and I said, look, just rewrite the pilot with me and see how you feel after that. And Gary agreed, and because he was a wonderful writer, he got into it. Right. As we worked on it, he wanted to make it as good as it could be. And so we contributed. I'm very proud of what we did to the pilot. And Shannon, in an earlier episode of this show, which I watch religiously, because I think it's wonderful. And I love these three people very much. But Shannon said, the guys who came in to punch this up. And what I realized afterwards, what we did was almost the reverse. We punched it down. The silliness was there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we got rid of some of it, and we'll talk about that too, because I remember some of the iterations of the script that we got. But I wanted to build that underlayer. I wanted to build the stuff that's at the bottom.
Right, what we always talk about.
What makes Hannah love about the show.
Right, what makes Hannah different than other kids' shows is that thing you started.
Yes.
Which is, there's an emotional base to this.
It's
not just silliness.
There has to be.
And we also got the materials from the outline and the pitch and one of the first drafts, in addition to the draft that you and Gary rewrote. And so I retract my previous statement that said you punched it up, which meant that you sweetened it.
Yeah.
And you made it
more
grounded and allowed the comedy to come out of how grounded it was with these characters.
That's what we really wanted to do. But at the same time, every writer goes through gets rewritten by other people. And there are some times when, you know, it's great, and there are some times when they rip out stuff and they ruin it.
Right. Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
We didn't want to be guilty of that, so we tried to keep as much as possible because we thought, well, Disney's already greenlit this thing.
Yeah. Right.
They must like a lot of it. So there were things that we did not change until the week of filming. Because I thought, well, I haven't done one of these in a long time. Maybe this is the right way to do it, even though I'm not wild about this stuff. Let's let it in. Let's see how it plays. But the thing I'm most proud of as my contribution to the creation of what became Hannah was Dead Mom.
You killed Mom.
I killed Mom.
He killed Hannah's mom. Steve Peterman killed Hannah's mom.
And you all love me for it. And here's why. I thought, all right, this is a girl who at the beginning seemingly has everything. She's adorable. She has an incredible voice. She's the number one sensation in America. She's living in Malibu. She's got the, well, we'll talk about Dad in a little bit. But I thought, we've got to give the audience something that makes her relatable, that makes them feel for her.
Right.
What's the most vulnerable thing? What's the thing that no matter how successful you might be, an audience is going to feel, no matter what she's... And we thought, you lose a parent.
Yeah.
Right. And that gave Miley so much depth, and it gave the whole family relationship.
Agreed.
You and Billy, and it also made the dad much more important. And originally, the parents, the two parents mm-hmm. originally in the show, were just songwriters. They were not performers.
Right.
That changed because of the casting of Billy.
Right.
So we'll talk about
and, and okay, so that. You may have killed Hannah's mom, but you were also responsible, and we'll get to it later, you were also responsible for Brooke Shields being her mom.
Yes. Yes.
So yeah. We'll get there. We'll get there. So you did make up for it a little bit.
Okay, I'm going to move on to our next question, which is from Jess3321 on Instagram. Asks, what was the crazy moment on set that kind of made you want to say, what am I doing on this show? Yeah. And I got to get out of here.
again, the school bills from Will's school oftentimes was like, well, that's why I'm here. But there were moments, especially in the first four or five. And by the way, I have not watched these episodes in 20 years, and I usually did not watch them when they aired.
Okay.
You'd seen them so many times. In
because I'm there on the set every day, and then I'm in editing afterwards, and you're going – anyway. So thank you to everyone who watched the show then and is watching this now, because watching those first four or five, there are moments when I go, oh, my God. This is terrible.
Believe me. Since you've watched the show, you know that we've had those moments,
It has been one of the interesting parts about the launch of this podcast is we do sort of have to wade through the uneven nature of the first episodes. We do have, like, moments of of revelations where you're like, you can see where the show is going to go. Yes. But it is definitely sometimes we're just like, oh, God, this is a stinker of an episode. Like,
And thank God you've talked about the casting. I know we're going to talk about that in a little bit. Those kids and you, I mean, we don't have – you've gotten enough compliments on this show.
No more compliments for you.
Who's your favorite character? Who's your favorite character? Anyway, the casting, the kids were able from the beginning, even as raw and green as they were, and they were all, you were not that inexperienced compared to some of these kids.
But was there a specific moment where you were like,
there were a couple of them. I mean, the volleyball scene that you guys talked about last week, the scene in the Zit episode where they're up on the.
Oh, we're going to get there.
Bongos on rooftops.
Bongos on rooftops.
All right. Yeah. I mean, at the beginning. Miley didn't know camera left from camera right.
Yeah.
Emily had not done any sitcoms, so she had done films, but she didn't know sitcoms. You were constantly working. We were all working, but you were on the stage. Slow down. Slow down. You don't know you're going to say your next line. You haven't heard the next line. Wait. Listen, we
react.
And on top of that, do all that naturally and hold for the laugh.
Oh, well, we didn't have to worry about that until the first live one.
But
anyway.
Yeah.
So I remember there were moments, and every week, because of the kid hours and because we were still learning how do we construct this so that we can get the kids' scenes shot and still get their schooling in and get out every Friday night. 7 o'clock is coming closer and closer, and my butt cheeks are getting tighter and tighter and tighter. Yeah. It was agony. It was agony.
I would like to thank you, and I'm sure all of our Hannah Montana fans would love to thank you for not screaming, leaving the building. And also thank you, Will, for being so young and having to have your school
and
tuition
shoes.
Pain.
Yeah. And eating shoes. Yeah.
But there were so many moments all the way from the pilot where it was like, yes, you could see, oh, this could be really good. This could be really good. Miley is so adorable in the pilot, even though she's, you know,
raw.
She's kind of all over the place.
She's raw.
Emily, when she does the slow walk, the first time she does
halfway
the slow
there.
Walk, right, halfway there, you just see these things. And you were our secret weapon because you had the most training. And the other kids watched how you prepared, which was a godsend, and they looked up to you, and that was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And you guys have all talked about Billy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because he wasn't a sitcom actor.
Right. I'll go so far as to say he wasn't ever really acting.
No.
He
no.
just was genuinely himself in every moment.
Yes.
And so, and there's a thing, you know, like when you're on, he was never on. He just was himself.
He was just
talking.
Billy. He was just Billy.
And his, and his speech rhythms slowed everything down.
Yeah. Yeah,
and gave
lovely.
The audience a chance to, oh, my ears. Thank God. Yeah. We worked very hard to get those kids early on to stop screaming. Mm-hmm. And
they're still trying to get me to stop screaming, by the way, on this.
You're all being very good so far.
Okay.
But I know a couple times you talked about, yes, the secret identity and how many times we blatantly seem to ignore that.
Oh,
but oftentimes conversations that, why are they talking so loud? It's because those kids could not remember.
Yeah.
We have to be quiet here. This is a secret.
You couldn't give them an acting note and a volume note at the same time.
No,
right?
No, their heads would explode. No, there was, I remember there were certain people where you go, you can't give two notes at once. Stop giving two notes at once, right?
Yes, yes.
One note, let them get it, then the next note. You
but
know.
There was always, from the beginning, there were those glimmers,
mm-hmm.
and you could see it, and the more we got to see what everybody could do,
mm-hmm.
and the more fun it became to write.
Since we're sort of talking about the cast, like we'll sort of jump mm-hmm. a little bit to the casting process.
Yes.
Do you remember anything specifically about, like, as you were each one of us, like
so
what
much.
You were looking for? Or, I know that when I went and did my network test,
yeah.
there was also the dads there, and
yes.
there was a very Italian-looking dude.
Yes.
And then there was Billy.
Yes.
And in going back and reading the early versions of the script, now I understand why there was an Italian dude. Because
right.
wasn't sure what direction the dad was going to go.
Exactly.
But is there anything that like leaps out to you about the casting of any of the series regulars?
So much of that process. Our casting people, first of all, were wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you cannot fault Disney on is... they were at the bus station, at the train station, at the airport. Who's getting off the plane? Who's getting off the bus? You there. You there.
Yeah.
You look like you. Can you walk? Can you sing? Can you dance?
Yeah, right.
They knew everybody. They knew every kid. They did searches for this. The whole reason that Gary and I were brought in was because they had tried to do this the previous season
mm-hmm.
with the original script.
Mm-hmm.
And Miley had sent in an audition tape, and I know our wonderful casting people saw something in that. But she was really young then. She was like 11 or something. And as they were doing the casting off of that script, they began to realize, this script needs work.
Right.
And they couldn't find the girl. They felt the script needed work, and that's why it was available for us to do that.
Mm.
So now we've done ours, and now we start the casting. Now Miley's a year older. She's still young, but she's at least a year older. And they're still thinking, this girl in Tennessee, this girl has something. And she's Billy Ray Cyrus's daughter, which is kind of intriguing.
Which leads me to a question that's not on the list. But the rumor is... that Adam Bennett is the one who said, wouldn't it be funny if your dad, when she came in to just solo, not as a chemistry read, wouldn't it be funny if your dad played your dad on the show? And then that kind of sparked the idea that Bill,
it,
no?
No, it may, I mean, that absolutely may have been said, but that's not what sparked it.
Okay.
I will tell you this story. First for Miley. Mm-hmm. Miley comes in and reads for us. And she's all over the place. She hits some things. She misses other things by a mile. She's talking too fast. But she can sing. And you guys have all talked about that. I give Gary Marsh full credit for saying we've got to have a girl who can legitimately sing.
Yeah, right.
She's got that husky, even at 12, husky Tennessee twang. And she sings. And I listened to her sing this song that she'd wrote called Going to the Beach next weekend. And she's fearless,
mm-hmm.
absolutely fearless. And that voice, I thought, there's nobody on TV that sounds like this.
Mm, right.
This is not your generic Hollywood, middle America, it could be anywhere girl. There's something about her. So she keeps coming back. And Lee and is working with her. Lee, our wonderful director, who brought Shannon in as her assistant. And I had known Lee when she was casting down at South Coast
Repertory.
And she knew me as an actor and loved me as an actor. Not that matters. And so Miley keeps coming back. And finally, it is between Miley, and one other girl who's very good. And I should look her up and see. I'm sure she's had a career. I'm sure she comes in and she does it first. And she's absolutely fine. Hits all the jokes. Mm-hmm. Knows the jokes. She's at least a year and a half, maybe older than Miley. So that helps. And then Miley comes in. And Miley does her thing. And she's better. But she's still raw. And at the end, the two girls leave. And so Gary says, so what do we think? And I said, the other girl's more experienced. She knows where the jokes are. She gets them all. The more I watch her, the more bored I get. I know she's very good. She's going to do a kid show. She's going to do a very good job on a kid show. But I've seen it. I've seen it a lot. Mm. I cannot take my eyes off Miley. I don't know what the hell she's going to do next, but she is so alive.
So prophetic.
Yeah, yeah, right? No, that's 100 episodes,
we had no idea. And the twerking was years away.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
But she had those huge eyes, that voice. She was so alive. Mm-hmm. And when she hit a joke, she hit it like nobody else had hit it. She came at it from mm-hmm. her own Miley thing. Mm-hmm. And I said, she can sing. I can't take my eyes off her. There's no one who sounds like her. If we get what I think we can get from her, and I knew how good Lee was.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And having been an actor, I'd like to think that I was able to work with actors in a way that not necessarily every writer had the ability to because they hadn't been actors. I said, if we get what I think we can get from her, America's going to see her become a star in front of America.
Wow.
I will always, that's my thing. That's the thing I did. That yeah. I'm most proud of. There's a lot of things I can't remember who did what, and maybe I did it, but maybe somebody else did it, and I don't want to take credit for it, but I know that I fought for that in that room.
Yeah.
And Lee felt the same way. Mm-hmm. Gary was like, yeah, sure. No, Gary liked it too. Yeah. But
Gary Donzig, not Gary.
Donzig. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. Sorry, just to
my Gary.
Yes. Yeah. But then how did the Billy thing happen?
Okay. So, and I want to get back to Emily and Jason, but mm-hmm. Billy, to his credit, stayed out of the whole process the whole time until Miley was cast. He mm. was nothing but supportive dad. Mm. And I remember a conversation sitting out on the balcony of mm. this apartment where they were recording her singing, I think, what might have been ultimately our opening song. And Billy and I were talking about what this could mean for her and what life was going to be like. And he just, from the beginning, and I've got memories, mm-hmm. a couple that are so profound, mm-hmm. he adored her and she adored him. And he said, how do you guys feel if I, could I audition for the dad? And we said, God, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because he's Billy Ray Cyrus.
Right.
He's got a reputation. And he's a real dad. It's a great publicity thing, if nothing else.
Right.
And he had done his doc.
Yeah.
But let's what the hell? Let's get him in. He's there that day. And I know who the guy you're talking about, very good actor. We mm-hmm. figured this girl is so green. We got to surround her with the most experienced people we can find. Mm-hmm. This guy had a lot of credits. And he did a lovely job. And as a matter of fact, Billy, I think for some, Billy had been talking to him and maybe heard the audition
right.
and walked in and said, you know, I just heard that. He's really, I think you should hire him.
Right. That's exactly yeah. like something Billy would have said. Yeah.
But Billy sat down with her to do the scenes. And the father-daughter love and the chemistry and the familiarity. And suddenly Miley, she's touching him. She's tickling him. He's tickling her. There's that chemistry that if you're lucky, you get on a show maybe halfway through the first year, if you're lucky. Mm-hmm. They loved each other, and they fit together. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, man,
this is done.
Mm-hmm. This is done. Mm-hmm. And he's Billy Ray Cyrus. It's a great hook. And that's when I had been thinking about, we don't need the mom. We got to get rid of some because it's too expensive. Make him the single dad. And instead of just a songwriter, he was a performer who gave up performing to raise his kids after the death of the wife, because that's how important his family was to him.
That's amazing. I love it. Okay, so then here comes the third in our family dynamic.
And here comes the
obviously
third.
Obviously, you got rid of the little sister.
We got rid of the little sister. As a matter of fact, the little sister may have been gone by the time I read it. I don't even
remember. No, she wasn't. She was actually in the pilot that you and Gary sweetened.
We got too many girls. We got, you know, we're not going to be able to service this many female voices.
Right.
We've got the best friend already.
Right.
So, and we're going to have people at school. So we need the brother, and at the time, this is part of the original script, the brother was written as insecure, unable to voice his feelings without the puppet. Nobody could make this work.
Fletcher.
Nobody.
Fletcher.
This guy close?
This guy came close.
Yeah.
This guy was funny and charming and... Oh, and he's like, he's so much better than the puppet.
But I had a sock.
I tried
so hard with the sock.
You also came in wearing one of those beanie propeller things to look really young.
Yeah.
And I think you were a big lollipop, I remember. Anyway, short pants.
Yeah.
But he just had it. And over the course of the first week, as we're filming... And we'll get to Emily in a second. But the more we saw of Jason, the more we thought, wait a minute. This guy, he's an older brother.
Right.
He has absolutely no problem saying this stuff to her. He doesn't need a puppet. And we all agreed, the puppet was a concept. We don't need the puppet because we got the right guy.
But the puppet didn't go away.
Didn't go away.
Until after the last run through.
Because I kept, again, not wanting to rip apart things because of my writer's ego. Maybe it works. But finally it was like he's trying his best. It's just not working.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just not working. And the scene at
partially why I thought I was going to get fired. I was like, I could tell. Like, this is, I'm trying, but this is not. What
there was no
be.
One close to you in the auditions.
Right. Nice.
Well, that's a lovely.
And sadly, I was too old to play the part. even then,
this is part of why we love this podcast.
Yeah.
Because your stories, we've heard versions of these before, but your point of view, your memory of them is slightly different, and we hear different things about the same story from a different perspective, from a different angle.
And I've heard things here from you guys that I had totally forgotten about and other things that I hadn't heard about because I'm busy doing other stuff and you're on the stage more and you... Anyway. So it's great for me too.
Before we jump to Emily, because we should jump to Emily because she's incredible.
Yes.
Who was the first one that says, let's cut Fletcher?
In your memory,
to your best recollection, who was the one that said, "Guys, we got to pull the trigger, right? We got to pull the trigger."
Who do you think it was?
Lee.
Oh, it might have been.
I 100% am willing to stake my career on Lee being the one who said, "You guys," because one of the reasons why
she would not have been afraid to.
She was not afraid to express her opinion.
Yes.
And having been on the stage with Jason and having, rehearsed the scenes and being down there and trying to massage it and get it to work.
That kitchen scene, man. The kitchen scene.
I am willing to bet.
Kitchen scene. Yeah. Kitchen scene was the big
Lee
reason.
Who said,
you know what? I'm because I have no recollection of it and it's not something I want to claim credit for unless I know, that makes complete sense to me. And
go.
I can also imagine myself when she said it saying, oh, thank God, yes.
Somebody said it.
Like nobody else could have said that unless it was the network.
Yeah.
But nobody else could have said that except for Lee and have it like
that,
have.
And that's part of what, I almost banged the table. And that's part of what, that's part of what that process was. You guys have talked about the pilot. but maybe because you weren't in the scene, you haven't mentioned there was a big second act Hell's a Poppin' scene that took after the girls have had their fight. Mm-hmm. Miley is back at Fermin's for a costume fitting.
Right.
And Emily's character comes, Lily comes up to, I think there's a try to apologize scene. And while they're talking, an iron on an ironing board falls and there's a fire and they save each other. And Emily does not reveal, I think she exits herself so that the secret will be safe. And yeah, that's part of what Miley, you know, makes Miley realize, oh, she's my friend. And we tried to make that scene work. And this goes for a lot of the big sort of physical comedy things that we did early on. At a certain point, I said, this is so big, mm-hmm. and we're heading for the finish line. We don't need this. This is too big. It's not working. Mm-hmm. We're going to be long. And we changed it to the skateboard coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Emily coming in, the two girls sitting there, mm-hmm. and those moments, the moment at the kitchen table, the moment when the girls are sitting together, and there are moments like that throughout mm-hmm. those first four or five shows mm-hmm. where we see what you loved about the show
right.
and what yeah. I loved about the show.
And I will say this about Steve, because he won't say it about himself. He's an incredible mensch. And when you are a writer who gets rewritten, there's a little bit of pain in that. Mm-hmm. And you tried so hard not to rewrite things to the, and then at the final moment, you just had to say the show is more important.
Yes. Yeah.
And thank God you did, because I don't think we would have ended up with the show we had for 100 episodes if you would, in those moments during the pilot, hadn't stood up and said, the show comes first, yeah. right?
And I got support on it
yeah.
too.
Yeah, no, right. I mean,
right. no one fought me very hard once I said it. Because yes. I think there is yes. this also thing of the train's running, we're running out of time,
right.
let's just go with what we have.
Yeah.
And then somebody says something that's maybe in the back of everybody else's mind.
Right.
But yes, I will forever be grateful that at that moment,
mm-hmm.
I felt that.
I'm grateful as well.
It's such a brave thing to push for, though, like especially in a kid's sitcom where that giant building on fire set piece at the mm-hmm. end of the episode is so kids television
yeah.
that the idea yes. that we actually ended up hanging like the crux of the episode on a two person yes. sitting there come to Jesus moment where they reconcile, like it's a big swing and, yeah. and
it's so different than the
and it's
way,
hard to make it work.
Yes, it is very hard to make it work. Yeah. It's so different than the way Disney was doing stuff.
Yeah.
I remember because I have friends who work on Raven who, when they broke stories, they broke in reverse. We broke stories mm-hmm. based mm-hmm. on that emotional core at the end. They
Always.
Broke stories based on how can we get Raven halfway through the ceiling, right?
Yes.
Because
that?
Now, granted, they
yeah.
had Raven,
right.
and that's what she did, and that's what right. they were writing for. But they were writing for the big funny.
And we had yeah. swinging chandeliers
yeah, we had,
and
yeah,
all
we
that
had,
stuff.
Yeah,
but
we
always, and right. I give full credit, I'm not the only person who right. who fought for, there has to be an emotional
right.
stake.
Yes.
Yeah.
Miley has to really want something and be struggling to get it or
right.
feel that she has screwed up in some way. And I think our audience may not always been able to articulate, I don't know why I care about this show as much as I do, but I think that was one of the reasons.
I think you're probably
and
right.
the two core anchors of that show were the friendship of those two girls
mm-hmm.
and the relationship of Miley and her dad.
Yeah.
yeah,
those
yeah.
two
yeah.
things,
and it had nothing
again,
to do with Jason.
Well, I mean, Jackson and Rico really is what the show's about. But we'll
that's
fine.
Oh, but let's get to Emily though.
Yeah,
we'll
yeah.
come
okay.
back.
Yeah.
All right, so Emily comes in. She's got her credits, but you learn how to read actors, the vibe when they come into a room. There are actors who. They're personally driven. They want to do this. And their parents are just trying to help them,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Then there are those who the parents are pushing.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't figure out what was going on with Emily, but I remember that when she walked into the room, her posture was kind of, her arms were straight down. She didn't make a lot of eye contact with us. She was kind of very, I later on began to think maybe it was just focus and getting ready.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't the big animation. There mm-hmm. wasn't the big expenditure of energy, but she had this tomboyish quality that Lily had, and she was really good. I mean, it was a really good audition, And here's another little backstage thing that nobody in the world knows, except maybe some of you who I've told. Emily went to school, was in the same class as my son in seventh grade. So I came home that day and I said, Emily Osment just auditioned. She goes to your school. Oh, Emma, she's in my class. What's she like? She's great. Will said, she's great. She's really cool. And a couple days later, I was at the school for a baseball game that my son was in. And I see Emily tearing past me. She's chasing somebody. And I say, oh, Emily, you auditioned for us. You were really good. And she, oh, thanks. And she races. she's racing after some boy that she's like, I'm going to get. Right. And I thought, that's Lily. That.
Right.
That's Lily. Yeah. So she had that thing right from the beginning. And
so fate. It's really fate.
Yeah,
so much.
Say.
You hadn't seen her there.
So much of this is amazing.
Yeah.
And Mitchell. Mitchell was just adorable, mm-hmm. and
smoking oaken.
but it took us the longest to try to figure out exactly where his sweet spot was, how to write for him. And I do remember after the first reading of the pilot, when we all came back to talk about it with the network, one of our network executives said, "All right, there's a big problem here. I think we all know what it is." And I thought, oh, crap, it's they're going to be on Emily for the voice, for the screechy voice. And I was ready to say, we'll work on that, but she sounds like a lot of girls her age.
Yeah.
Girls watching it are going to say, she sounds like me. Right. I mean, yeah. It's not bad. They were not crazy about Mitchell. And I said, it's the writing. We haven't found him yet.
Right.
He's going to be fine. Right. But I was like, oh, my God, they're worried about Mitchell. Mitchell's going to be fine. Yeah. I thought I was going to have to protect Emily. Right.
I think that's been one of the funnest parts of watching this first half a dozen episodes or so for the pod is seeing the evolution of
Oh, my God.
Because so first, is he really slick? Is he actually a little nerdy?
Yeah.
Is he a good guy friend? Does he have a crush? Like, there was so much stuff figuring out, but, like, same thing. You would every once in a while, you'd see him do something.
Yeah.
He would do, like, a physical pratfall or he would, like, I don't know. He would just react to the girls in a way where you're like, oh, that's what he'll be.
And what was genuine about Mitchell was he loved being a part of this gang.
Yeah.
He loved those two girls as a human being. He just and so that became.
I love the fact that it never seemed like he had to have a crush on either one of them.
Right.
He eventually ends up with Lily, but like,
but
he was a total like bro buddy.
Exactly.
For them.
Yeah.
It was cool to be able to play that without any unnecessary manufactured tension between
exactly.
them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I do really remember cool. Lee showed the pilot to her kids because after the fact, when the show got picked up, and she said she showed the pilot to her kids, and her son said to her, "If you cut Oliver, I swear to God, I'll never talk to you again." Mm-hmm. Because he was so, like, he was a boy that had not yet been seen really in this situation that was like so relatable, and he was kind of a weirdo, which I love, by the way, and awkward and all the things that boys are that aren't like super jocky Jackson type.
Yeah. I also want to, while I have it in my mind, it's easy to get frustrated, bash the network sometimes, and there were notes that made us crazy.
Yeah.
But there were other notes that, God bless them, I'm glad we got the note and that we were sort of forced to take it at times, but at other times chose to take it. They fought for Rico.
Yeah.
We wanted Rico.
I need a 10-year-old boy.
I need a 10-year-old boy. And I was like, oh, my God, where are we going to fit this kid?
Right.
And Moises became not only a solo secret weapon, but the relationship that eventually developed between the two of you was like a Laurel and Hardy. It was a classic comic duo. And to watch the two of you figuring out bits, maximizing what you could do together.
Yeah.
You found a kindred spirit. He found a partner. And it gave us so many wonderful stories, which allowed us to construct stories where filming became So much easier.
Yeah.
Last, oh, my God.
And the last thing I want to add is we've mentioned our friend Roger Christensen.
Yes.
The first four episodes or so, we had different directors after Lee left the pilot. And they were kid show directors, and we got kid show shows. And there are times when cameras are lingering on people and there's no reaction. It's just, can we please cut away? There's nothing happening here.
Yeah.
Things are broad and sticky. Roger, who we had worked with on Suddenly Susan, and we had given him his first directing job there. Roger came in and created the template that made it possible for us to do the show without killing ourselves every week or killing the kids.
Yeah. And also, he was the associate director on Friends.
Right.
So
right.
And had directed on Friends.
Right.
So
right.
He had this, you know, greater sitcom idea of what timing was and like how things were funny.
And he
and
had
how
that gentle, calming.
So wonderful.
Yeah.
He was exactly what the show needed.
Yeah, when he really was.
Yeah. So we've talked about the core cast a bit.
Right.
I was curious about guest stars from the show. Was there any guest stars that you personally fought for, or you called in specific favors, or you were pushing casting to go after? It was anybody that you just desperately had to have on the show?
You know.
Well, it dovetails into an audience question, which I'll just add to it before you answer, which is Janice Marie on TikTok asks, when writing the episode, do you imagine certain celebrity one-off cameos and who would be best for those episodes? And do you try to get them? And if you don't, do you have a backup? It's kind of the same idea.
Right.
All right, two things. First of all, early on, everybody's trying to get guest stars because everybody's trying to pump up their ratings, right?
Of course.
You hate it. You hate it because you're going after, I know you were talking last week about, you go after this person and you wind up with this person.
Who's right.
Completely different.
Right.
You have your wish list. It never happens.
Right.
I used to hate it. And at a certain point, the network always felt, although they began to learn by the second, third year, network always felt the show is the star. The show is the star.
Right. Right.
We could put anybody on. And for a while, they were right. This show broke that mold.
Right.
Miley became bigger than Disney. Chasing guest stars was one of the things I hated.
Yeah.
Because it also oftentimes meant distorting a story to serve guest stars.
Right. True.
Which we liked building stories as we got better at it. Because, again, apologies for those first few. Wow. I was not nearly as good. You guys came together much better, quicker as a podcast than we did. But anyway, and then as the show became this phenomena, we got people asking to be on the show.
Yeah.
Right.
Because what you discover is no matter how famous you may be, if your kid falls in, you always want to be a hero to your kid. And if your kid falls in love with the show and you can get on that show and your kid by extension gets to go to a filming, gets to hang out with, we got people asking.
Right.
We got the network saying,
yeah, which brings me to my favorite story that you must tell. I'm going to force you to tell.
All right.
So I'll start the story. We're in the writer's room, and we write this bit in an upcoming episode. We'll talk about it, where Miley as Hannah has to get into the restaurant, right? And we have this little downbeat where some celebrity is there and can't get in, and then Miley rushes up and goes, oh, can I get – and oh, I'll get a table for you, Miss Montana. And we thought – who can we get to play that celebrity?
Right.
And someone in the writer's room, and I believe it was Steve Meyer, but I may be totally wrong, thought it's a total Larry David bit. And we all laughed and thought, yeah, like we could ever get Larry David, right?
Right. Okay, there's an antecedent to this, which is that 3 weeks before,
earlier that season.
Earlier that season. I know you and I.
You were right about it. You were right. I thought it was the year before, but you're right. It's earlier that season.
Before. And then I get a call in the room from one of the assistants. Larry David is on the phone.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know Larry David. Larry David, at that time, Seinfeld is the biggest thing in the world. And I don't know Larry David, but one thing I'm guessing is Larry David has a teenage daughter. So I get hello, yes, I get on the phone and I say, let me guess. How old is she? He says, she's going to be 13. I can't get tickets. I'm trying to get tickets. I can't get tickets. to most of us writers in Hollywood at that time, and still to this day, I think, Larry was a god. So I said, Larry, what your kid wants to come, your kid's coming to the show. So I made sure they got the VIP treatment. Mm-hmm. The daughters had a fabulous time. Larry's a hero to his daughters. Mm-hmm. So now it's 3 weeks later.
Right.
We have this scene. Yes, we want to show that this is an incredibly exclusive restaurant. Right. So who can we get? Our first thought is, let's get Gary Marsh, the president of
Disney.
Oh, right.
That's true. Yes.
Because this... Mm-hmm. Doug has a problem with breaking the fourth wall. Right. At a certain point, I didn't.
Yeah,
because the blend between...
Well, he could still play himself. He could still play the president of Disney.
And also because at a certain point, Miley on the show and Miley in real life, there was such an interesting bleed. Our audience, we knew the emotional core was there, and we would throw in little fourth wall things, oftentimes for the parents, oftentimes... for the kids, because we felt it would make our audience feel like we're smart.
Yeah. Yeah. They're
throwing us a smart joke because they know we're smart.
Absolutely.
So we thought, how great, we get Gary Marsh to, and he can't get a table. And he's like, excuse me, I'm the president of Disney. Excuse me, I don't care.
Right. Yeah.
So Steve Meyer or Andrew, or one of those
somebody
said, what about Larry? And I said, I did him a solid. It's worth a shot. So I go into my office and I call Larry David's office. And miracle of miracles, I get put through right away. So already I know, all right, he remembers. It's only 3 weeks, but he remembers. In Hollywood, 3 weeks
is forever.
A long time.
I thought it was the season before. That's how long ago it was.
So Larry says, I said, Larry, we got this thing. I don't know if you're interested. But we have a scene in a restaurant, exclusive restaurant. We'd love you to play with your daughters a scene where you're trying to get in with your girls and you cannot get in. And we can, if you feel like your daughter, they'll get to hang out with the cast. We'll do it in one day. Mm-hmm. They'll get to hang out all day with the cast. If you feel they'd enjoy it and be comfortable, we'll give them some lines. If not, we'll give them all to you. And he's like, oh boy. Oh boy. I never do this. When is it? I say, it's this.
I don't know. We had a specific day we had to shoot.
Yeah, we had to do it.
We had to do it.
And he said, we're shooting a curb.
Yeah, right.
Can you flip it? And I said, we don't have anything. We can't flip it.
Yeah, because we didn't have a script for the next week.
We didn't have a script. That's right. And he said, I can't. And I'm like, all right, I got one last shot at this. And I played the Jewish dad guilt card. Once again, there are a lot of times in my career I can look back and say, you didn't make it that. I was proud of myself this time. I said, Larry, you are a wonderful dad for even considering this. I love my kid. I know you love your kids to even consider this. So listen, maybe something will come up, later in the season or next year, and we'll try again. And he's like, wait a minute. Don't call anybody. Give me 20 minutes. And he called back 20 minutes later.
When you came into the writer's room and said, he can't, but he said give him 20 minutes. And we're like, he's never calling back, Steve. Right. We're like, Steve, we know that you just got ghosted. He's never calling back. And then when Milda came in and said, Larry David on the phone for you, we were like, boom, are you kidding? And then he
said, okay, I'll do it. He had flipped the schedule around on Curb.
Yeah, he changed his shooting schedule.
Imagine having that kind of power.
Right.
And we wrote some funny stuff. He may have done his own version of it.
No, here's my memory.
Okay.
Because Larry David came on the show, and of course, as the acting coach, dialogue coach, I would come up and I would say, hey, I'm Shannon, I'm dialogue coach. I'm here to run lines if you want to. And he's like, oh, great. And he grabs the script out of my hand and he goes, I'm gonna say this. I would never say this about myself. My daughter's gonna say this. She's gonna get that line. And he rewrote the scene.
Mm-hmm. Which we thought was improv, basically.
I was like, great. And so then I have to go back to you and I say, hey, so.
Right.
Just so you know.
But it was fundamentally the same.
Yes. And I said, Larry David just rewrote the scene. This is what it is. This is what he's doing.
Right.
And you were like, great.
Yeah.
That was it.
Because just like his show, it was exactly the beat we needed.
Yeah. 100%.
And he did it the way he wanted to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he was going to play himself like he plays himself on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
And it was terrific. It was exactly what he does to his people. Here's the scene. Da, da, da. So he does it. It's great. We're all watching on the monitors. And I cannot believe we've got Larry David.
And it was all because you went there and you
I gave it a shot.
You gave it a shot.
And then, of course, on Monday, I get a little coda, and it's great. I get a call on Monday, Larry David again. Now what? Larry says, how was I?
Oh my
I said,
God.
You were great. It's hysterical. He said, I think I was too big. You weren't. It was wonderful. He said, can I come into the editing room?
I said, can I pick my takes?
No.
Can
I reshoot? No, you can't come into the editing room. Don't worry. I will. You'll be happy with it. And he said, all right, just more wide shots. No close-ups, okay? As few as you can do. But it was great.
It was awesome.
It was absolutely wonderful.
We have like a million questions.
Oh,
we're gonna slowly wrap it up. I think with two more things I'd love to hit.
And I think this is a good time to say we're not gonna not ask these questions.
Yeah.
We're gonna have Steve back.
Yeah.
So
and we're gonna push these questions down the road a little bit, and we're gonna have Steve back multiple times and talk about different things as we go. So if you haven't had enough of Steve, which I haven't had enough of Steve, we're going to have Steve back, so don't worry.
But there's two things I'd like to hit before we go. The first one I want to give you, you've listened to the podcast.
Yes.
You're a massive fan, so I've heard.
Massive. I have your posters up in my bedroom.
But one of my favorite...
My wife's not happy about it.
Go ahead.
One of my favorite things about the show, though, is we acknowledge these are our very imperfect memories of what happened and what our perceptions of the show were. Anything in the first batch of these podcasts that you've heard that you want to refute? Do you have a different recollection of anything? Does anything jump out that we got wrong? And if not, we'll take it. We can totally be perfect. But was there anything that had jumped out to you? That,
by the way, Steve has notes.
I want to make sure that I I correct every mistake. No, actually, for the most part, I don't think so. I think, you know, for the most part, our memories are all roughly the same.
Mm-hmm.
And there are little specifics that we all have different points of view on.
Right.
But there are stories that I've never heard of yours.
Yeah.
Like
right.
Some of these casting stories I'd never heard of before, which is fantastic for me.
I always feel like I had like a slightly better idea because I hear so many versions of Billy Ray was the first one cast, Billy Ray was the last one cast. And I always felt like
the show was written for Miley. I've heard that.
Yeah.
She was the last person likely to get this job at the beginning of the process.
Oh, yeah.
That's incredible.
But once she got cast, though, the dominoes fell quickly.
Yes. Right. Oh, one of the questions that people, I think it was one of the questions that was raised, and I do want to ask, when did I know that the show was going to be whatever?
Yes.
There are a number of steps along the way. The first was when we cast her.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, she can sing, and she's really interesting. Then that audition with Billy. When we saw her with Billy, I thought, this show's going to work on Disney. I don't think it's going to go... None of us saw what it was going to become.
Yeah, right.
Then the filming of the concert footage at the Alex Theater.
Oh, yeah.
Watching Miley up there, and to this day, when Miley sings, I just stop. And she had it from the beginning.
Mm.
She can sing... And there's a thing she has where you know there is no place else in the world she would rather be. This is what I was born to do.
Yeah.
That day we shot a bunch of songs and I could not get over. Oh my God, this girl.
Everyone talks about that day about, oh my God, you shot numerous songs numerous times. It must have been the longest day ever. I have the same memory you have, which is that day went by like that. It went by so fast.
And you just... She can do it.
Yeah.
She can totally do it. And this is just the beginning. Then, and you guys haven't talked about it yet, the first live show in front of an audience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We knew we had something. But that first live show, and to give Disney credit again, by the time we started airing, her songs had been playing on Disney. The audience already, the prospective audience already knew who she was. that first scene that you guys did in front of the audience, I remember going backstage, we were all going to remind everybody, hold for the laughs, you're going to have a real audience in here. The first few shows we did without an audience because the kids needed the time to learn how to do it. That first show in front of an audience, it starts with this complicated thing. You have to hit a marshmallow on a spoon and flip it up in the air, land it in your mouth perfectly. Lily has to come in, hit this mark. Lily goes off onto the balcony to do her robot dance while Miley's on the phone. She milks that thing like she'd been doing it for years. Everybody hit everything in that first scene. And we all looked at each other like, oh, my God. And the kids came off. They had all looked white as ghosts backstage before the opening. Everybody was terrified. Yeah. It's going to be great. Hold for the laughs. Hold for the laughs. Listen. React. Yeah. After that first scene, they were like,
give me some more of that.
They came off going, I told you.
Yeah. No, well, and Miley just like a little energy leech off the audience. Like she, like between takes, it was like, how can I interact with them and get them charged up and feed off that energy?
Oh, yeah.
Like we ate.
And then the very last moment, because when you're doing the show, you're in this cocoon, right? We're working all week long. We're filming. Then we go home, try to spend a little time with our families. Then we get a little sleep. We come back to work. So you're in this cocoon. You start hearing buzz about the show. But at the end of the season, we went down to the, I think there was an iHeartRadio concert at, I can't remember, Staples or someplace. And me, old rock and roller, high school rock and roller, I have my all-access pass. And I'm standing alongside the stage talking to Miley and her mom, and then Miley goes under the stage to get into this little elevator thing to come up for her reveal. And she comes up, and I'm on the side of the stage with 16,000 kids, and the roar that hit me like a wave, like it almost physically knocked me down. Mm-hmm. That's the thing I thought. We got a tiger by the tail here, and it was just
and all
amazing.
Because of those decisions that you made a year and a half before that, or 2 years, or whatever during that development. Because if those decisions weren't made, that girl doesn't pop up on that stage to 16,000 people.
We did skip a question like that, and I'll read just because the fans
demanded.
They asked it.
Orange Cat Nation on Instagram asked, "Who was your favorite character in Hannah Montana, and why is it Jackson?" I didn't write the question.
Yes. No, you did not. That is a real legit question.
I loved that cast like my kids. Yeah, I love that cast like my kids. Every one of those, I love everyone for their distinct difference and for what they gave to my life and what I get. We all get people when people find out, you know, you were on camera, but when people find out we were connected to that show to this day, I get people, not just people who grew up watching it, but I still get people saying to me that I could watch that show with my kid, and there were jokes you threw in for us, for the grown-ups. And we'll talk about the Aristocrats at some point. But at any rate, we were part of a cultural thing that did not make the world a worse place.
Yes.
That's great. And you did a great job, actually, of like going all the way back to the beginning and answering Maddie Fickert's, you know, sort of original question about whether you thought it was going to be a huge success and when did you know and all the impact. So I think that's probably a pretty good place to wrap this version
up. This was incredible.
Amazing.
Erased by...
Was my energy okay?
you were
yes,
good.
Yes, Larry David, you were great.
Did I do okay? Can I come in and edit it?
You want to watch the edit?
Was there anything, because we like to afford our guests the opportunity, anything you want to plug? Do you have anything coming out? Do you have any talk show appearances? Any socials?
I shot my agent golf a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
I did bring one little prop.
Oh, what did you bring?
All right, so... I have my season 4 jacket, which is great.
Yes.
High quality, you're right. I have my Ricoh's Surf Shack hat, but I have something I don't think anybody else has.
Oh, I cannot
on
wait
the last,
to see.
On the last day of filming, Beach sand.
Oh my God, you have beach sand.
I picked up some beach sand, and I've had this on my desk.
We have Disney Online 3. They'd like their beach sand.
20 years. And every once in a while, I take it out in the backyard with a 9-iron, and I practice getting out of sand.
Chip it. Yeah, that's from Ricos.
That is awesome. That's from Ricos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I wonder if that's
gonna,
where
and in my dotage, I'm going to sell this grain by grain.
For it on eBay.
this has been amazing, and we're definitely going to have you back. We have so many
more
stories.
There are more stories to tell.
There are so many more. I know. We're going to.
I will watch even the episodes I'm not on.
Oh,
thank you, Steve.
You guys do a wonderful job. I have said this to you in emails and stuff, but the audience, friends, fans of the show, the love and affection you sense amongst these three is legitimate. They're wonderful human beings. I loved working with all of them, and I loved the chance to come back and explore the show. You're making me watch it again.
Sorry.
Some of it's agony, and some of it is so joyful. Yeah. And it's only going to get more fun as they get older.
Well, I thank you for because this is the man who actually hired me here. Yeah. This is the one who brought me on. This is the one who changed my life right there. That's the guy right there. So I owe everything post 2004 to this man right here.
Yeah, me too. Very early on in the show, you did approach me and sort of on the side, just say, you're funny. I trust your instincts. If you want another take, let me know. And you sort of unlocked my willingness to try stuff.
Good.
And it made the whole experience a million times better. Oh. And
no one took a note better than you and ran with it. And I've got a story of one specific I'll save for another time.
Ooh, a little teaser for next time.
My blessing of Steve Peterman will be this. There is nobody in the world that... Mm-hmm. I would meet on stage. We would both run towards the stage with acting notes, and they were almost virtually 99% the same.
Yes,
even
very funny.
Go for 4 seasons.
Yeah,
I would get, and I didn't know. I had no idea I wasn't supposed to do that, so I just did it anyway. But we would get out there, and I would be giving a note, and you'd be like, "Are you telling?" Yeah,
yeah.
And then you got it. Yeah,
you absolutely. It was like telepathy.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
This has been so much fun.
All right, we did it. We're gonna go ahead and wrap this up.
Land the plane.
Everybody, thank you so much for hanging out with us. If you want to watch the pod, make sure to subscribe on Best of Both Our Worlds YouTube channel. Helps us a ton if you engage with the algorithm. Click the buttons. Leave us little comments. Share with your friends if you like the show.
Someone could come over to my house and explain how I do that, that would be just great.
Yes, absolutely. You can follow the show on Instagram at Best of Both Our Worlds podcast, on TikTok at Best of Both Our Worlds, and we're going to put an X on X.
okay.
So check us out there. This has been Best of Both Our Worlds, created and hosted by Jason Earls, Douglas Danger Liebline, and Shannon Flynn, executive producer Renee Colvert, produced and edited by Jeffrey Murphy, recorded at Quest Pacifica, original music by my buddy Joe Serafini, and social media strategy by Shelby Stahl and Beloved Social. And Steve, if you're willing, will you take us out with my little...
Right into your camera. Look right down the barrel, baby.
You got that SAG card all paid up.
I say good day, Daddy. Good day. Woo!
A regal way out.
Nailed it. Thanks, guys.
We did it. That was amazing.
Thanks, Steve.
Oh, Steve.
So much fun.
It goes by so fast.
Yeah, it goes by so fast. We're definitely going to have you back.
It's the best of both our worlds.
Telluretic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. Terms and conditions apply.